O Holy Night, the great Christmas hymn, says, long lay the world in sin and in error, pining, aching, until he appeared. And then the human soul, for its very first time, was able to feel its worth, its value. And I really pray that as we march through this holiday season, you with your family and friends and us together as a church family, that you will really have a sense of your worth, of your dignity, of all that God has called you to be. And there will be many of us who are here next weekend, but I've already talked with a bunch who will be traveling for the holiday season. And so let me just say on behalf of Arlene and I, Merry Christmas to all of you who will be away. Pray this will be a very blessed season for you. Now, between Thanksgiving and New Year's, we're going to spend more time with relatives than at any other time of the year. Now, that's a mixed bag, how you hear that, depending on how you're feeling about your family these days. For some, that's really great news, and for others, not so great is the news. Now, I thought, as we had charted out the preaching calendar, and I knew that Tom and I would take these 2 weeks and give a Christmas focus, and then the third week, as Kathy mentioned, just as we interrupt our series on the story, Matt will be addressing us for a New Year's focus after that. But I thought with the 30 minutes that are allocated to me, I thought, you know, I think what we'll do is we'll just play a game. And here will be the game. We're just going to take the mic, and we'll just pass it. We'll get as far as we can, and we're just going to play this game. My family is weirder than your family. And that will certainly lead us to prayer. Anybody think? Now, I decided we wouldn't play the game, so. But anybody think without playing, hands down, your family won the prize? Now, we all have two things in common. The first is, we all have our beginnings in a family. In fact, I find it really curious in the mind of God that when God would not distance himself from this sin-stained, fallen world, but instead, in the love of his son Jesus, the story of Christmas, he would reach to touch this world. But strange to me that he would do that from the beginning of a family. Jesus himself is born into a family. We all have our origin, our genesis in a family. But there's a second thing that we all share in common, that we all come from very imperfect families. And you could get the family, we could ask, who do you think is the perfect family in CA? We could get them up here. And once we interviewed them, we would find out they are far from perfect. We're all in imperfect, flawed, dysfunctional families. What makes your family imperfect and dysfunctional? And the correct answer is you. And it is me. Amen to that, is right. Now, the Bible commands us to the highest of all values. You can take your theories and all your ologies and toss them out, because at the end of the day, here's what it is. It's just basically love. 1 John 4 says, God is love. So what is this season all about? We all say yes to it. We all long for it. We hunger for it. We know we're made for it, to love and to be loved. And yet, the ironic thing is that the most difficult place for that to be lived out is at our very own addresses and our very own families. God felt so strongly about this idea of family and love that right in the heart of the Ten Commandments, of all the things to command, He says, I want you to honor your mother and your father. Now, I brought a few family pictures with me today. This one is of my mom and my dad. And they really are remarkable, wonderful people. Now, why is it so difficult to honor your mother and your father? Well, let me speak, because those people are weird. My mom and dad, they are wonderful, but they're weird. And then out of their weirdness was produced Captain Weirdo. I was the eldest of three boys. I was Duck Dynasty with my grandson at Halloween. And then there's a picture of the boys, Larry, Moe, and Curly. There they are. It's just generation after generation of weirdness. And then that's my bride, Arlene. That was a picture with her dad before he passed away last year. And she has to be weird because she married me. And then we had my son, Luke, and that's my daughter-in-law, Martinique. Just more weirdness. And my two grandkids, there's a picture of my daughter, Megan, that's coming up. There's Megan. And even in my, you've heard me talk about my grandkids, got to be with them recently. And Zach is now 2.5, but I was with him a couple months ago. There's the four generations. And Zach, my son is in the building trade up in Bend, Oregon. And so when I was with them one morning, he needed to go check on a couple of jobs. So Zach went with us. We walked just down the street. And so Zach these days does not walk to anything. You set him down, he's gone. And so we were on this job site. There's lots of stuff, rebar. It's sort of a dangerous thing. And Zach has run off. And so Luke, his dad, calls out to him and says, Zach Gregory Pickerel, I said stop right now. And Zach suddenly just stops. And Luke said, Mister, don't you take one more step. And Zach just went, ah! Literally, that was exactly what he did. Luke, don't you move one more inch. Ah! Just my grandson is weird. It's in him now too. And then there's Arlene's side of the family, multiplied to the power of three in terms of weirdness. Just the whole clan is weird. Are there any more people? Oh, that's my granddaughter. That's Genevieve. Isn't she precious? And then I've got these nephews. Look at this picture. My nephew Shane. Uncle Mark, look at all my tattoos. Weird. God set us all in families, and He intended for them to be places of safety and acceptance. And for some, you've already had a chance to be with your family, and you are so grateful. You are so grateful because your family is that. But for a bunch of people, for far too many, Family is dangerous and it is painful. Now, no family, plural, ever grew by chance. Families don't grow by chance. They only grow by the choice of each family member to, with honesty, face off with their own personal weirdness and choose to grow. And I offer these words this weekend to the whole of our church as the weirdest of us all. But I got to tell you, I have the deepest hunger. I have the deepest desire to grow, to be more like Jesus. In fact, even as 2015 comes, it is my plan, as it was this year. I'm going to be less weird at the end of 2015 than as it begins. I desire to personally grow. So the impact of that will overflow into my weird and wonderful family. Now, and by the way, Jesus himself redefined family. Jesus, who's your mom? Who's your dad? Who's your brother? Who's your sister? Jesus said, it's anybody who does the will of God. So I don't care how jacked up, how your family may be gone. See, we're not only have our origin in nuclear families, but we're a part of the family of God. So these words are appropriate to us today as an entire church. Now, throughout the holidays, we're going to gather at tables like this. And I want to use just a few items off of this table for the moments that we have to talk about some things together as a family. The first, I want us to talk about this white napkin. Now, some of us, we approach family with this kind of attitude. We use this as the white flag of surrender. I give up. This family is a lost cause. There's no hope for it. And I want to encourage us all to not come this holiday season to our families with a posture of defeat. Because yes, it's true for you, even as it's true for me, that all of our families are really weird, which makes them terribly complicated and painful. But I can tell you that Jesus came so that there can be places of growth and improvement. But see, that must begin with you. It must begin with your thinking being altered. That these individuals in my family and this family as a whole is not doomed. We simply do not have to live stuck in the ruts and patterns of the past. Every family gathering, every gathering that you're a part of, but family gatherings are shaped by the attitude that you bring. You bring a negative spirit and you are guaranteed a negative experience. Because you will smell it on another family member when it's this attitude of, look, yeah, we're family. I admit it. We got the same parents. But let's basically just get this thing done and over as quickly as possible, because nothing in this family will ever change. I urge all of us to be bigger than that. Well, look, it'd be different, but if they would, I will. It's the great relational premise. And let me ask you, how's that program working these days? God asks you and I, will you choose? You choose to simply be a positive force in your family. This is very important. I have no control over how anyone else will respond or think about me. No control. But I am utterly responsible before God for my behavior, responses, my words, and my attitude. My very famous favorite Christmas passage is an odd one, but it comes from Philippians chapter 2. It tells us that he came. It tells us how he came. It tells us why he came. Don't look only for your own interests, but take an interest in others too. You must have the same attitude that Jesus had. Though he was God, he didn't think of equality with God as something to be grasped and cling to. Instead, he gave up his divine privileges and he took the humble position of a slave. And he came. He was born as a human being. Imagine if all of us came to our families with a God-prepped, a Jesus kind of attitude. The napkin reminds us to never give up. To never give up. Secondly, now this might seem odd in your family, but we always had name cards. Now you think, Mark, did your mom and dad forget who you were? Well, no. My dad, for much of my life, was a professor. And the school that he taught at, there were many foreign students who would come to study. And so every Thanksgiving and Christmas, we had the United Nations at our house. There would be 10, 12, 15 sometimes, students who had nowhere to go, and they were in our home. And my mom did not want them to feel as though they were a visitor. So she would take a little card like this and put their name on it. And I remember, even as a little boy, I can almost play the tape back and remember many of the responses of those who were in our home. And there was something powerful about their name, that we knew their name, that we welcomed them. Now, the Bible tells us that God knows your name. And that's a really a profound and far-reaching thing. The names are important to us. When we hear the news that someone is pregnant, a mom and dad will go through a painstaking process of selecting a name, and that the name is given. But what can happen in families is that other names begin to emerge over time. Not given names, but names where people begin to feel trapped. They feel like they're labeled. In fact, names that get deeply tattooed on a person's heart. And strangely, even though we become adults, we find ourselves still living out the script of those names of our youth. I was with someone who is a remarkable, confident, courageous individual, a business leader, and I happened to be in their family setting with this individual. And I watched them, and I was like, "Who the heck are you?" And so we talked about this later. I wanted to be careful, but they opened the door to it. I said, I almost didn't even know you. You were so utterly different in that setting. Because adult children can feel like kids all over again. I remember our guys went through a year-long deal together a number of years back. And I led a little small group of men, and I was shocked at the response of men. One guy in particular just wept. He said, you know, when I grew up, I thought my name, I literally thought my name was little piece of, now I'm going to use the word crud this morning, but that was not the word that his dad used with him with such frequency. I just thought my name was a little piece of crud. I sat with a grown woman, and I could not believe my ears. She said, Mark, literally, my name was the ugly one. the incompetent one, the stupid one, the one who will never amount to all that much. Those names, oh, they're tough to break. And even though we're grown, even though there's been great change in our lives, it's easy to fall back into those early scripts. It's hard to break free and to live in the name that God has given to us. See, because when God thinks of you, God always sees in us what can be. I've talked with, privileged, by the way, to talk with whole entire families. And it's always funny how sometimes siblings will recount their growing up days, and one will find it as such, and then another, it's like they were raised in an entirely different home by entirely different parents. I was taken by a couple of sisters several years ago who have now died. I brought a picture of them. I saw them interviewed on television. They are the Delaney sisters, and they were 101 and 103. And in the interview, Betsy, who's a 101, said of her older sister, Sadie, who was 103, she said, there's still times I just bug her. And she'll look at me, and she'll give me the eye, and it's the look, and I can tell she disapproves of me. Now, 101 and 103. And then she said this, I just have so little hope for the future. Siblings. I'm so grateful I share a deep and wonderful and rich relationship with my brothers, Tim and Todd. But siblings can be so very cruel to each other. Sibling rivalry is not anything new. We came across it. Maybe the most famous sibling rivalry, at least in the Bible, was two boys named Esau and Jacob, and their parents, Isaac and Rebekah. In fact, the Bible tells us that their rivalry, they were warring and they fought even in their mother's womb. And they could have not been more different. One of them loved to go to gun shows and one of them loved to go to Comic-Con. And we read these words that Isaac loved Esau, but Rebekah favored Jacob. And in those words will be generations of hurt and pain. See, there's hardly a family where one sibling won't at some point say, you know, it wasn't me. I wasn't the golden child. No, it was my brother or my sister. And there were special rules and there were special things for them, but not for me. Families, sadly, can develop unhealthy alignments. A parent with a child. Parents against children. Children against another sibling or against one of the parents or if not both. And in this case, it's a mother and a son. And you remember the story. Isaac has now lost his eyesight and he's left to the senses of touch and feel. And she will disguise her son. And she is clearly helping him in his new name. See, there is no grand plan. There's no grand planner. It's you. It's left to you. It's every man for himself. It's dog eat dog. And if you don't figure it out, nobody else will. You better manipulate and scheme and connive your way and get it for yourself. And remember, Isaac, he's very suspicious. But he's disguised, he's deceived, and he gives the blessing to Jacob. And then some of the saddest words in all the Bible, when Esau heard that his father's words, he let out a loud and bitter cry, oh, Dad, what about me? Bless me too, Dad. Where's my blessing? He begged. But Isaac said, your brother was here and he tricked me. He has taken away your blessing. From that time on, Esau hated Jacob because their father had given Jacob the blessing. And Esau began to scheme, I will soon be mourning my father's death, and I can't wait, because then I will kill my brother. Well, I think there's an important lesson that we can all be reminded of, that every family must be so very careful about the alignments that they create. Well, we need to treat every child exactly the same. There's a problem with that, because it's impossible, because every child is so utterly different. And they all need nurture, they all need acceptance, and they all need love and discipline, if I said it. But see, they all need a different kind of nurturing and a different kind of discipline. And that makes parenting so very, very complex. Now, none of us can change the family of our past, but we can change how we behave with siblings and parents today. To all my CA brothers and sisters, resist those old scripts. Resist treating others the way that you always have. Resist putting them in boxes without room to grow and room to surprise you. Oh, I was pierced as I wrote those words. The Spirit really nailed me on one particular family member. Our God is in the business of changing names. Jacob will become Israel. Abram will become Abraham. Sarai will become Sarah. And Saul will become the great apostle Paul. Choose as God does, to see what's possible, to see the very best in those who are in your family. Third is this knife, and I want you to consider not the potential of others to wound, but I want you to consider the power that you have to wound another. Because it's with a knife that we stab, we cut with our attitudes, but especially our words. See, and families are to be the place of affirmation and acceptance, but far too often it is the exact opposite. You would think with family, which we all so desperately need, that anytime we got a chance to be together, we would be on our very best behavior. But sadly, instead, we throw away any kind of regulator, and our behavior can be absolutely deplorable. See, because we have history with our family, we've got some inside secret information. We know one another's vulnerabilities and deepest sensitivities. And families, rather than being our greatest ally, can oftentimes be our harshest and most cruel critics. And because of that, it makes every family conversation a very filled with interesting possibilities. My dad and I had a deal happen a number of years ago. And still, it's quite tender and even revealing. But I felt prompted to share it. And it created a relational wedge. Now, my dad and I have always loved each other. I've known he's always for me. I think he knows that of me. But there was just a relational wedge that was created. And for a long time, too long, in fact, when my dad would say anything, everything in me would recoil. It just would grind me inside. Now, I'm doing my best to honor him and love him. Now, if anybody else would have said those exact same words, that'd have been no big deal. but because of the history and the hurt, I heard everything through that filter. See, family conversations have these huge backstory agendas behind them. Therefore, we can't hear each other. We fail to hear one another's words. And a big source of family conflict just happens around simply the right and wrong way to do things. And have you noticed that there's not a single family member who does not have a strong opinion about everything? What's to go in the stuffing? How to cook a turkey or a ham? And that will lead to someone who feels in a very righteous, moral way that you should never eat a turkey or a ham. How do you keep a house? How do you raise kids? And let it slip into political and social issues, and the dark night sky can be lit up like it is midday. See, dispensing advice to family members who have not asked for your brilliance is not a wise thing to do, because your words will only be seen as a criticism, even though that is not your intent. You will be plunging the knife in over and over again. But Mark, you don't understand. They're wrong. Look at their life. And you may be so very right, but so very wrong at the same time. Because the wisdom literature of our Bible, Proverbs says, if you correct someone who does not want to be corrected, it makes you the fool. So a suggestion. We've still got Christmas and New Year's. Holiday meals, keep it really light. How about that weather, that rain we got this year? How about them Clippers? The Bible says, respect its warning about the power of words. James 3, 5 through 10 makes it so clear that your tongue has phenomenal power to light a fire and for poison to slip out of it. Words mean more than you would ever know. See, once words get out of our mouth, you can't get them back. That's why the Bible says, be slow to speak. Be so careful with your words. I know of families in this church who have not sat with their family in over a decade because of past words. Tragic. Tragic. In fact, I had a couple say to me, they said, we're so grateful that CA has all these services, because I just hate my brother, and he goes to the early service, and I go to the late one. Yeah, that's why we have multiple services. Yeah, that's why. You know, it's been my experience, not only personally, but as I've got to sit with untold people over the years, that conflict resolution is usually not the strong suit of most families. But I want to remind you, it's Christmas. And why did Jesus come? Well, without the coming of Jesus, we would have stayed for all eternity the enemy of God. But Jesus came so that we could be reconciled to God through Jesus Christ. 2 Corinthians tells us that we are now ambassadors, and we are not only reconciled to, but we are reconcilers of human beings to that God. But there's even one step further. It is absolutely incongruous for us to name ourselves as follower of this one who reconciles us and not be reconciled to one another. See, God is not concerned with who is right. God is concerned with who is reconciled. And to reconcile, it cannot happen. It will not happen unless humility and truth come into the picture, you must deal with your ugly ego and pride. Now, the most holy day on the Jewish calendar is Yom Kippur, the Day of Atonement. And I had the privilege to be physically in Israel years ago on Yom Kippur. And it was one of the most remarkable things I've ever witnessed. Literally, imagine the 405 and the 5 freeway, not a single car. When you got up on the Day of Atonement, I'm telling you, it was like, it was just not a sound, not a peep, not a car, nothing. And before the Day of Atonement, my friend, our guide Gila, she was on her phone and I said, Gila, what? It just seems like everybody's on their phone. She said, Mark, they are. Because the Day of Atonement, Yom Kippur, requires that before sundown, we make every relational thing right. She said, that's what everybody's doing. She said, I had a blowout with my sister that I have not resolved, and I've got to make that right before tomorrow. Now, I said to Gila, I said, you know, Gila, you know, Jesus came not so there would be a Day of Atonement, but a life, a way of atonement. And God's highest goal, I want to just ask the CA family, between us as a family, but between you and others in your family, are there any relational wedges? God's highest goal for this Christmas season is that there would be reconciliation and love. Romans 12, 17 and 18, never pay back evil with more evil. Do things in such a way that everyone can see you are honorable. Do all that you can to live in peace with everyone. Now, I have no control over how others respond to me, but I have full responsibility that I initiate in humility towards you. Lord, help us all to let go of our need to be right. Fourth, we'll sit at tables and there'll be glasses of water. The Bible is filled with water from beginning to end. Genesis 2 opens with rivers. Revelation chapter 2, those are the bookends, and there's water all the way in between. Jesus stands at the Feast of Tabernacles, this great holy event, and he says, anybody thirsty? Anybody looking for some water? You banged your head enough? You tried hard enough? Jesus said, come, all of you who are desperate and thirsty, come and drink from me. And all of this water in the Bible is a symbol, it is a picture of the goodness of God, and that his grace is a never-ending flowing stream that is coming towards you. And he just says, look, just get in the stream. But you get out of that stream and you'll be cut off and you will die. And that's exactly what happens in families. We cut one another off from grace. You can be as refreshing as cold water to a parched life. And one of the ways, practical ways you can do that, you can make superficial conversations significant by simply asking a lot of good questions. One of the great relational gifts that you can give someone is just to listen. We have all kinds of seminars on how to talk and how to speak and how to preach and all that. But there's no lessons. And the Bible says, be slow to speak, but be quick to hear. Your opinions can wait. And that might be a surprise to some of you who have thought that your family is just waiting to gather with you to hear your commentary on all the stuff of life. We can be water to those who have made different choices and hold different beliefs. And if you know that a certain issue is going to start a fire, then you be the water that puts it out. Fifth and finally, there'll be salt. There'll be a salt shaker at every one of our tables. In some families, you are the only Christian. Jesus said, you are the salt of the earth. Now, boy, a thing that's properly seasoned and salted, it so enhances the flavor. But we've all had the experience of something that's been oversalted. Try as you may, you literally can't eat it. Well, I would just challenge all of us to set aside any need that we might have to go on a preaching campaign with families. Pray and love and care and listen and ask questions. And our great God will open doors, because it only takes a little bit of salt. And with God's help, you can be a bringer of love and hope to your family. So I want to show you just two final pictures before we pray and close. Now that was July 4th. I had to come back up because it was on the weekend. I couldn't be there, but that's most of my family. We were all down at the beach. That's my weird and wonderful family. And we are complicated because of our weirdness. We have created pain, every single one of us, for the other. But that's my family, and it's the only one I'm ever going to get. So don't ever give up. Don't ever give up.